All right, we're going to talk about this. Got a couple subjects tonight. The first one's going to be the Da Vinci Code. We're going to look at that because that's a big thing. And by the way, I found out that it's being taught all over town in different churches already. For this next Sunday coming up, they're doing a teaching on it on Zion. They're doing another one up here uptown. They all saw pretty much the same thing I saw, the potential problem that it's going to create. And the second thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about this latest coming out in hardback and on DVD, I guess this new Gospel of Judas, our buddy Judas. Okay, and we're going to talk about both of those because they have a lot of things in common. So, and I want to start with giving you a kind of a little background of this. The Da Vinci Code, which is kind of interesting that they would do it. This movie that's coming out, the book that was written, it's just one in a long series of books and writings that have been produced over the years that have tried to expound a certain perspective about Christ. I remember years and years ago they came out with The Last Temptation of Christ. Anybody ever see that movie?
Sure.
Okay. And now most Christians wouldn't go. And I understand why. But I wanted to know because I'm in a position to be able to, you know, why should you go? I can go. I can tell you what the thing's about. And that way you don't have to have experience it for yourself. I'll tell you, it was really hard to take. It was really hard to take. It was really bad. Now, what the basic bottom line is on this whole concept is a perspective that's been developed over years and years and years through vague writings from different individuals and hypotheses and what ifs, you know, that what if Christ really didn't die on the cross? And what if he really wasn't God? And what if he was just a man? And the whole thing's a hoax. And so they have all, you know, it's kind of like, what would the scenario be? You know, it's like, what if there wasn't air on this planet, it was only water? You know, we'd probably grow lungs and we'd have fins. And I mean, it's a what if. So what you do is you start out with this hypothetical, and then you fill in and you backfill the whole thing till it becomes something that's plausible, believable. I tell you, when I first saw this, I didn't see it because I wasn't involved in Christianity at all. I was just doing my thing, you know. And Christianity was something that I had just started to look at. But I was really an avid science fiction reader. And I remember reading a lot of the works of L. Ron Hubbard and Isaac Asimov. And one of the things I really was fascinated about when I would read some of these better science fiction writers was how they could really backfill the material around their premise to where it sounded plausible. You know, you're reading a science fiction book and the people are really, they're not really humans, they're another kind of a being, they look like lions, you know, and they have spaceships. There's all kinds of stories I've read. But the reality is that when these guys write, they take that premise, okay, I'm going to write about non-humans someplace else in time and space. And they're going to look like this. And then you start backfilling this entire thing to where you come up with everything around it to make it sound plausible. And one of the best ones at it that I saw was L. Ron Hubbard, because he could fabricate a religion for this planet, for this group of aliens, that would almost make sense. I mean, you could sit there, you could read that, and you would go, well, you know, that sounds like an interesting religion. Because he could do that. That's their ability. That's their skill. Their skill is to be able to fill in all those holes to where you have a tapestry that's seamless, in a way. Anyhow, so when I came across this, I was very much reminded of these old sci-fis that I read and some of these old books by Hubbard and some of those, because they were really masters at this. And with the advent of technology, with the advent of science, with the advent of all the extra ways to be able to fill in the fabric of the tapestry. You understand that? You know, you can tell a tall tale in the Dark Ages, but there wasn't enough resources. You can't really say, you know, okay, spaceships, and because there was no technology, you wouldn't be able to sell that to anybody. I mean, you would come up with Beowulf, this creature that would come in the middle of the night and kill people and eat them, you know, or something like that. One of those heroic poems they would write about people. I mean, you even come up with things like, in more modern times, you know, Paul Bunyan, and stories like that. You know what I'm talking about? But what happens with technology and science is it opens up all these other windows. All these windows to be able to just throw in, according to our research, and the DNA, and the carbon-14 tests, and they go on and on and on. See, they can do this when they have, it's just a story. Now, the bottom line is, we're looking at a work of fiction, and it reports itself to be fiction. And of course, the authors say, well, we hide behind that so that nobody tries to really give us a hard time, but it's really what we believe. But we call it fiction so we're safe. Which really, scientific writers have been doing for a long time, especially if they were writing satirical, political things like Gulliver's Travels and things like that. They hide behind the fact that it's just fiction. It's just a story, okay? So they wouldn't get in trouble. And these guys are using the same kind of deal. But it is actually a work of fiction. It is just a fabrication. Now, some of the premises of the Da Vinci Code are kind of an interesting thing. If we focus just on this latest manifestation of this teaching or understanding or conspiracy theory, is really what it is. You have some elements in it that are, you know, a little strange. I by the way, I, for my own notes, I titled this that Roswell thing again. Anyhow,
that's great.
Anyhow, just because it's what happened the other day when I got my first phone call on this. Zoe Martin is one of the girls that, I don't know if you all met her or not. Mm-hmm. You've probably met Zoe. Anyhow, she called me on the phone. She was all excited because she just heard about the Da Vinci Code. Oh, what do you think about the Da Vinci Code? Da, 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 I've been here all... I said, it's that Roswell thing again. Of course, she didn't get it. But the reality is that, I mean, this layers and layers of conspiracy about what? About something we don't know, really know, or prove. We can't prove. And it's like most of the things in this genre. You have things that are proposed as truth without any documentation at all that stands behind it. Just secret stuff, secret writings, secret groups and organizations, secret cults, secret this, secret that, secret everything, and how that's how they keep from having to show you anything. Well, you know, the Knights Templar, you know, were so secretive that none of their documents exist anymore, and, you know, and it's on and on and on, and it doesn't stop. So, when you hear this stuff, then you have a problem. I mean, I was doing some research today, and what I really came up with, and this is very interesting, that there is more evidence to support that Christ came and died on the cross and was raised from the dead than there is that Alexander the Great was here and came and did his thing. Mm-hmm. Do you understand that? there is more evidence of Christ's coming, his ministry, his dying on the cross, and his resurrection than Alexander the Great, who ruled almost the entire world at one time. And I'm going to myself, I'm going like, well, why? Because there really isn't anything. There wasn't anything written. It wasn't recorded. It wasn't written down. And stuff was written hundreds of years later about Alexander the Great. Nothing was ever... I mean, what evidence is there? Okay. It's not that I don't believe that Alexander the Great was a great conqueror and they ruled most of the world. I probably... that's reasonable. But the reality is that there's more evidence of who Christ was. Now, one of the first problems with this... this crazy movie and the book, the Da Vinci Code, is, of course, they set it up with a title that's catchy. Okay? And they used the name Da Vinci. And Da Vinci, everybody knew who Da Vinci was. He was a genius. I mean, this guy, Leonardo Da Vinci, he was a scientist. He was an inventor. He was an artist and painter and everything else. And so he was, one of the guys on the inside. He was, if anybody knew what was going on, Da Vinci knew what was going on. After all, he was part of one of those secret orders, where they don't write the people's names down. Anyhow, he's part of one of those secret orders. And there's a bunch of them. Anyhow, that Da Vinci was supposedly a part of. But supposedly a part of the one where he knew from information that had been handed down to him by people in that organization, the Priory of Sion, that he knew about this thing. And that's why he did what he did. It's all over the place. And here's how they're packaging this. They have a picture of the Mona Lisa. They have a picture of the Mona Lisa, and they go, "Why is the Mona Lisa smiling?" Okay, this is how they're selling this. The reason she's smiling is because Da Vinci knew some secrets, and that's why he made her smile, because it was kind of an inside thing.
That's a leap.
And a wink and but here's the thing. Let's look at a couple things real quick, and we'll talk about it as we go along. But they attacked Christ, and they say he wasn't who the scripture said he was. Now, I understand part of this, because part of it is this Gnostic writings, the Nag Hammadi texts that were all those parchments that were written on that were all found in there's a whole cache of writings, and they're all these gospels and all these, there's bunches of them, Gospel of Thomas, all those things are part of this, and the Gospel of Philip, okay, which, every once in a while I do this just because I think it may be at the level I've reached in my studies I'll be able to understand one of these. I'll go reading one of them and I'm going like, this is insane. There is no way to make heads or tails out of this stuff. It is just off the wall lunatic stuff. But I didn't really understand why for many, many years until I understood a little more about the Gnostic sect. Or they were heretics. Considered by pretty much all of Christendom as heretics. They did not consider themselves heretics. And basically Gnosticism was enlightened salvation, a salvation through enlightenment. I think, therefore, I am, that's carried into nowadays, that is part of a whole group and body of beliefs that exist right now. But it's basically that intellectually, I raise myself up and I save myself. Gnosticism is, they do like a lot of other religions and a lot of other cults do, is they take the Bible as a basic thing, and then they rewrite it. And then they have all these extra added texts that are their gospel. That's what they believe from. I was reading the Gospel of Philip today, and trying to. I couldn't get very far. I'll let you read it if you want to read it. It is just lunacy. I mean, it is. It's just lunacy. But anyhow, I was reading it, and I was reminded of a time in the past, many years ago, probably 20-ish years ago, when there was a guy running for president named, I don't know, it starts with an L, anyhow. And he was this third-party candidate, and man, he said a lot of stuff that really was like right on stuff. And I asked somebody once, I said, well, how about this guy? This is a guy, some businessman that I knew that was pretty successful and Christian guy. And he said, you got to be careful. There's more there than you see. And I said, what the heck is that all about? So I was thinking seriously about my wife and I, Teresa and I went to one of their, you know, grassroots recruiting people to work for the campaign. You're not going to believe it. I did this. Can't remember the guy's name. Anyhow, and this guy passed out a book that he wrote. And he wanted us to, we all had to buy the book, his book that he wrote. And we all had to read it. Or we wouldn't be able to come work for his election campaign. And I looked at this book, and it was just like reading this Gospel of Philip thing. I'm going, what the heck is this? I got to have a couple of dictionaries and an encyclopedia set here just to try and understand. I couldn't get past the first few paragraphs. And I raised my hand because I really don't think I'm an absolute genius, but I'm not retarded, okay? I really am not retarded. I swear I'm not retarded. I'm somewhere in between. And I couldn't understand this at all. So I raised my hand to the guy and I said, you know, I'm having trouble understanding this book, and I've been through 6 years of medical school. I mean, not really. I don't think I'm an idiot, but I can't understand this stuff at all. And I had four or five other people in the audience. Says, yeah, I had the same problem. And the guy came back with this nasty nastiness, and he said, either you learn to understand that and figure it out, or you can't work for us. Because we require that anybody working for us raises up to an intellectual level that we can relate to. I'm going like, whoa, I couldn't get out of my chair quick enough. We're out of this place. These guys are neo-Nazi something or others. I have no idea what they are, but they're lunatics. But you know, they get up, they talk a good thing, and then you turn around, you read the real deal, and man, it's just nut stuff. Just nutball. Doesn't make any sense at all. Going off in all directions, their brain just explodes on the paper, and you think you got to pick up the pieces and make some sense out of it. It's almost impossible. Anyhow, I'll remember the guy's name one day and I'll tell you. But when I read the Gospel of Philip, the same thing. Now, there's one passage in the Gospel of Philip, that they use in this, okay? In that it says that that Mary were his companions. That he was with Mary and Mary, and Mary Magdalene, his companion. Aha! It's talking about his mother. It's talking about his sister, because his sister's name was Mary too. Okay? It's Mary, his mother, Mary, his sister, and Mary Magdalene. He was with the three Marys. And called Magdalene his companion. And that was it. That was enough for them to go off. That he was having sex with her, and she got pregnant, and all the whole thing that goes along with it, they were married, and on and on. He never died on the cross, that he took off, and they just went and moved to France, like some of the actors we have in this country that like, they just go live in France. Why not? Anyhow, they're understanding people, and you can hide there. In fact, you know, the flag is all white, so you don't have to worry about printing anything special if you want to wave their national flag. Anyhow, the problem with this is that it's just another one of those nutball deals. Why? Because it's real easy. It's like saying, something that's totally unprovable. Well, prove me wrong. Well, I prove you wrong. There's no evidence there at all to prove you wrong. There's no evidence at all of any of the stuff you're teaching. Now, to prove them wrong, we have all this body of scripture. We have the historical records, Josephus, and all these early historians that wrote about all this stuff. We got plenty of evidence of this, but they have to find a way. The author, these conspiracy theorists, they have to find a way to shift the blame. Okay. Well, of course the Bible says all this stuff, but is the Bible reliable? You got to understand Constantine. Constantine, remember who Constantine was? Emperor Constantine, he got in there and he mucked it all up, which he did. But he didn't do it for this reason, okay? He was looking to control the world.
Right.
and he was looking for a political resolution, and he was looking for something he could use. And he hated the Jews, so he got rid of the Jewish names. But it wasn't his idea and intention, as is allegated in this new movie, that it was Constantine's idea to deify Christ. Why in the world would he do that? Constantine could care less. As long as everybody believed in one thing, he was happy with that. He wasn't even a Christian. Give me a break. He was a Mithras worshiper, and it didn't matter what name you call the guy. As far as he was concerned, it was all the same deal anyhow. So he embraced Christianity, because politically it was a good move for him. Now, but according to the Da Vinci Code, Constantine had the Bible completely rewritten to make Jesus into something he wasn't. That he was just a prophet, he was just a good guy, and Constantine made him into the Son of God, a deity, God himself, and on and on and on. Now, we just went through this teaching about the problem with the understanding that most people have is they don't know how to separate who he was before, who Christ was before he came, who he was while he was here, and who he is now. So there are all these scriptures that show Christ's humanity. Yes! Yay for us, because without that we wouldn't have any chance at all. But they think that that negates the fact that he was once part of the Godhead, the Word, that came down and took upon flesh, and is now again part of the Godhead. You can't, just because he had humanity, doesn't mean that he is now back installed, reinstalled as part of the Godhead. So they take off on this, oh, look at all this stuff that said he was just a man. And they narrowly focus on those contexts, and they say all this other stuff was just made up. He was just a man. And now you have to get, see, you got to get past the problem. There's a big problem. The problem is the cross. See, that's the big problem. So it was all made up by Constantine. As if Christianity didn't exist for hundreds of years before Constantine was even born. Are you with me so far? Mm-hmm. This is if you watch the movie, if you waste the money in going to see the movie, you'll see that they shift the blame of the evidence. So how do you make the evidence no longer evidence that Christ was who he was? Well, you just say, well, that's not really evidence. It was all manufactured by Constantine. The glove. Oh. You know, here's a shriveled up old glove with the lining turned inside out. Of course it's not going to fit on his hand. You got to turn the lining back inside out. Now, by the way, I watched that. I was stupid in the O.J. Simpson trial. But Furman manufactured all this evidence. See, that's how you do it. It's how you always do it. It's always the same way. You always say, okay, what you think is true isn't because this guy over here faked it. And they discredit the evidence, which there's plenty of in Scripture, and other places, by saying that the whole cross was manufactured. The whole crucifixion was manufactured. He was never crucified. He never died. He never was resurrected. This is the position of the Da Vinci Code. That he snuck out of town in the middle of the night one night, took his honey with him, and they moved to France. Or whatever. they had a baby girl, and now all this is being hidden because it's a very secret thing that we don't want anybody to know this because his offspring is so precious and the nice temper there to guard it and not, and I'm going, wait a minute. If he wasn't crucified, and he wasn't raised from the dead, then he's nobody important at all. Why have the Knights Templar? Why have all these people? Why have all these secret cults protecting all this information? He was just a guy. Who cares? But of course that doesn't fit their scenario, so they just ignore it. I love this. This is so funny. If it wasn't said, because it's a problem. Now, I'll read you just a few other points, because really there is not a whole lot to do with this. There's a lot of information. Here's the other tactic is you pile it on, and you pile it on, and you pile it on, and you make overwhelming amount of information so that it looks like it has credibility. So it's this guy's opinion, that guy's opinion, this other guy's opinion, and this other, and this little, this this man, I think somebody said, anyhow, and the next thing you know, you got big, huge piles of nothing but a bunch of hearsay fabrication. Nothing of any value. There's no meat there. Nothing there. It's all fluff. It's all this. This guy said, and that guy said, tons and tons of quotes from different people. It's just opinions. There's no evidence of anything. There isn't anything that comes close to evidence. Of course, they explain that away because it's all secret. Secret organization, secret cult, secret. Of course you can't see any other documentation. Are you kidding me? It wouldn't be secret. If you're going to read this stuff, you know, hold something in your hand. So anyhow, it's there's no resurrection of the dead. The relationship with Magdalene results in a girl child. Basically, he was not the Messiah. But why? Why is it so exciting? Because everybody loves a mystery. Everybody loves a mystery. I mean, they like it better than they like parades. Okay? Everybody loves a mystery. And the more mysterious it is, the better it is. And they'll always believe a certain amount of it. Now, generally when we talk about the promotion of a lie, I tell people it's kind of like the arsenic in the apple pie. The apple pie looks good, but there's poison in it that's going to kill you. Because the overwhelming body of it is true. But there's a lie in there that's really bad and it'll hurt you. This is different. This is arsenic with a little apple pie in it.
Right.
It is really out there on the deep end. But understand, this is the time. There's a time when this is happening where people's minds are looking for titillation. They're looking, they got the itchy ears. They want to hear something different. Because after all, there's nothing new under the sun, right? But there's got to be something new. There's got to be another way of telling the Cinderella story or one of these other. I mean, you know, there's always another way of telling the story, right? But this one sounds different. This is a different story. This is, oh, wow, this is new. This is different. This is exciting. Now, and then we also have this release of the Gospel of Judas, which is now coming out for your monetary investment. You can buy this book. It is not free. And it's just they just found this. This is really, they just translated. In fact, it's just being printed as we speak. It'll be hitting the newsstand soon, and you can buy a copy of it. There's always this part of me that say, oh, it's, they just found it. And the release of this, along with everything else that's going on, the timing is almost supernatural. Okay? The Gospel of Judas, I'll give you some highlights from that. This is what you're going to read in the book, and they'll probably make a movie of this one too. They got to. Because in this movie, Judas is a good guy. And the conspiracy is that he and Christ cooked this whole thing up. We talked about this the other day, didn't we, last Sunday?
Well, you can see how people can actually think that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because how could someone who would be as dedicated and love Jesus as much as Judas obviously did, or apparently did, how could someone with such devotion allow themselves to be taken in such a way to perform such acts unless it was on purpose?
Part of the plan.
Part of the plan, part of what he knew had to be done. It all seems to make sense at one level of consciousness.
At one level of consciousness.
Yeah.
This is the first blush.
Right.
At first blush, it smacks you. Well, you know, yeah, that makes sense. If you don't know anymore and you don't dig. Yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. If you don't know anymore and you don't dig, then that's all you got. You know, there's always people that have always wondered whether or not Jesus is really God, or Jesus is really the Messiah, or I mean, there's half of the world at least, okay, and of the body of Christian believers, lots of them, even ministers, by the bunches that really don't know if that was true at all. I mean, I've read surveys. You'd be surprised. Mm-hmm. Pastors of churches that don't believe in stuff, they don't believe in the resurrection, don't believe in all kinds of stuff that's in the scripture. Anyhow. But the point is, that's the point. It, you know, they, you hear that little bit, and it's, you know, yeah, well, why would he? Anyhow. Mm-hmm. So, the problem with that whole concept, that it was a conspiracy between him and Judas, and the other guys were left out of the loop. It was like, it's not good to tell them. I want them to all think that you're really a traitor. And hate you forever. Mm. But this doesn't make sense, does it?
And drive you to suicide.
Yeah, and drive you to suicide. Well, that's the thing. We know that he was the treasurer of the group. We know that he had a bit of an attitude already. Now, we replayed this scene on last Sunday, mm-hmm. over lunch, that when Mary opens the alabaster box that's full of precious ointments, and she pours it over Jesus. Remember this scene? Everybody familiar with the alabaster box, right? I don't have to go read it to you. Okay. Who jumps out of the woodwork into the middle of the room yelling at the top of his lungs, "What the heck do you think you're doing?" It's Judas. That was worth a lot of money. Think of all the children we could have fed. You know, it's all like a dark. Anyhow, the scene, you see somebody and you go, wait a minute, what's his problem? I mean, really, what's the first response? Okay. So it was well, but all right. If it was wrong, wouldn't it Jesus have stopped him? Would Jesus have stopped her from breaking open that alabaster box? Sure. If it was wrong, he would have said, "Oh, don't do that. Look at all the kids we could feed." In fact, he does the opposite.
Didn't Jesus kind of rebuke or?
Absolutely, absolutely. That's the point. Yeah. He says just the opposite. He says, "Wait a minute. Mind your own business. What are you talking about? I'm the one that's going to die anyhow. This is she's preparing my body for death. Mind your own business. She's doing something good. Anyhow, so he's rebuked. That don't sound like he was in on the plan. On that one, does it? Okay. Jesus is sitting in the room. They're having Passover. They get to the end part, you know, where it gets really good, and he tells everybody, he says, you know, there's one sitting in this room at the very same thing we're sitting at right here, and that's to you. When I see you, there's a guy. That guy's going to, that's the one who's going to betray me. Watch out, he's about to dip his bread in the wine. There he goes. Why would he do that? Why would he talk to them and say that to the disciples? If what Judas was going to do was what he wanted him to do, he wouldn't call it betraying him, would it? Nope. Okay, the guy that's in the deal, the guy who's going to make this thing happen tonight, our man Judas, let's give it up for Judas, man. He's my man. He's going to make this thing happen. No, he doesn't do anything like that. He's going like, there's a traitor in our midst. And this traitor is sitting here at the table with you guys, and he's fixing to do this. And as Judas leads forward, Jesus whispers in his ears, and he says, go do what you're going to do. Do what you got to do. I've said that line enough times. Take your best shot. Do what you're going to do. And by the way, every time I use that line, I was ready to hurt somebody. Anyhow, I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I did use that line many times. Here we go. Back in the old days, B.C. And another problem with this, that Judas was in the, was on the inside of this conspiracy, is that we had a problem here because Satan went into him. The scripture said Satan entered into Judas. Okay. So, was that part of the conspiracy that, okay, I'm going to let Satan come into me. I'm going to believe in you, but I need this guy to help me. Does a believer really need Satan's help? I don't think so. For anything that needs to be done of God, is anything that needs to be done of God needs Satan's help to be done. Now, the plan was, and there was a conspiracy, if you want to call it a conspiracy, but it was with the Father and Christ. Not between Christ and Judas. And it was a conspiracy that Christ wanted out of himself. In the garden when he's praying and he's sweating blood. And he's saying, take this cup away from me. God, take, if it's answers any other way to do this, I'm open to suggestions. God, take this cup away from me. So, in that whole scenario, Christ is the only one who's privy to the inside deal, although he's told the disciples they don't get it and they don't want to hear it. When he says it to Peter, and Peter says, oh, don't you, they're not going to kill you, I won't let them kill you. Don't go down to Jerusalem, don't do that, da da da. And he says, get thee behind me, Satan. Because Peter was not on the inside of the plan. He didn't get it. He didn't understand why it had to be done. And he was trying to short-circuit it, even in the garden when he pulls his sword out and he whacks the ear off the guard. Jesus stops and says, man, just chill. You got this? I got this under control. And there's a reason why. We know that Jesus was not in the loop. Because Satan would have known the real plan if he had been. I do believe that there's a better possibility that Satan would have understood the plan enough to maybe not press him like he did to betray him. But the other part of it is this, is that this plan that was hatched way before they sat out at dinner that night at the Last Supper, way before that. Judas had already gone and talked to the Pharisees and he'd already made arrangements to betray Christ ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So just because Satan went into him after the dinner didn't mean he had already planned it to betray him before the dinner. And then, of course, the last kicker is, why would Judas have killed himself if he was just doing the right thing or doing what Christ wanted him to do? He would have just been proud as punch. He wouldn't have done it if he had known that there really was going to be a resurrection. He wouldn't have done it if he knew the plan. And he wouldn't have killed himself if he had done it knowing the plan. There'd be no reason to. So Judas' suicide undoes that whole thing that it was a conspiracy between him and Christ. It just doesn't make any sense at all. It's totally, totally logical. Totally illogical. Now, I've got a bunch of scriptures on it, but, you know, the one I want to talk about is I have a 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 5, if you have your Bibles. It says this. 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 5. I want, because this is the point of tonight, and I'm going to go back, I guess, some pictures to show you by Da Vinci. So you can see a few things where it goes wrong. And we'll talk about the Last Supper too. But I wanted to cover this part so we can spend the rest of the time doing the other stuff. 2 Thessalonians 2, 3 through 5. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. Now, the word here is the word apostasy. Apostasia. Now, here's what I'm laying out here for your understanding or debate, for your edification, if it's for that purpose, is what brings apostasy. Apostasy is a falling away. It's people that are believers becoming unbelievers. And according to Christ, it's going to happen on a large scale. To where it becomes like the tribulation is, full scale. An apostasy. That there's going to be a falling away. That people are going to just drop it. They're going to drop their belief. They had it, and they drop it. So there's a difference between that and never having it again. Apostasy means they're going to fall away from it. They're going to fall away from the faith. How does that happen? I'm going to tell you how it happens. We have got an organized plan that's being implemented as we speak and has been going on for a little while now. And it's going to get bigger and worse as the days go forward to try and discredit the Bible, our belief in God, our understanding of Christ. Because if you can take him off the throne, if you can take him off the cross, then the scripture that says, if there is no resurrection, then we are empty. Just like Paul taught Sunday.
That's right.
If there is no resurrection, this whole thing is a huge waste of time. And so what you do is you bombard everybody with all these things that bring them to doubt that the information is correct, that the Bible's correct, what they hinge their faith on ever even took place. And what you have is apostasy. You have a tremendous falling away. And how do you do it? It's not, you can't do it one-on-one. I'm telling you, you can't do it one-on-one. It's too hard. It would take too long. But you put them in movie theaters, on the books there, at the book stands, and all the bookstores. Bestseller. You know, I'll bet you anything this Gospel of Judas is a bestseller. Bet you anything. Bet you it takes in $100 million first year. Just like it was a big Hollywood movie. Why? It's happening. Mm-hmm. We are staring it right in the face. You want to see how apostasy happens? Go to the movies. Because it's not indirect anymore. It's not, let's corrupt them morally. Let's show them some skin. I mean, let's really, you know, lead them astray. No, it's not. They've tried that. They've done that. It's already passé. It's full frontal assault. Damn the torpedoes, full steam ahead. They're going to go head on against Christ. And they're going to take him on. And they're doing it. And they're doing it today. Not next week, not next year. It's happening right now. We are watching this unfold before our very eyes in a way that was impossible for any other generation to accomplish. And they're going to do it right in front of us. Right under our noses. And I know why all these churches are gearing up. I can see somebody's heard the call. So the Holy Spirit's going, man, are you listening to me? This got to get done. These people got to be warned about this. This is going to be a problem. See, they tried it with the last temptation of Christ, but they wouldn't go to the movies. The Christians didn't go. It didn't work.
Right.
They'll go to this. Tom Hanks.
Well, plus this is indirect assault. The last temptation of Christ was a direct assault. And this is coming in through a side door.
But it is still another direct assault. And it's, but the reality is that now we're Christianity, people in general, society in general. They'll go see it. Mm-hmm. When the last temptation of Christ came out, we wouldn't go. The Christians, I mean, I don't know hardly anybody that went to see that. I saw it on television, I think. Mm. I didn't even go to the movie to see it. It was out of TV. It was on me, out of the movies already. So quick, because it was a box office bust.
Yeah.
It was a bomb. Didn't do any good at all. It's the same storyline, basically. Except they spun it with this, like they've done the last genre of movies where you have all these conspiracies, all this secret, the treasure hidden in the back of the dollar bill thing, you know, under the behind the Constitution, and you know what I'm talking about. National Treasure. It's back to back. It's the same kind of thing. It looks the same. It has the same feel for the audience. Go ahead.
When you say they, who do you mean?
They. Those that are being influenced by the demonic realm. And unknowingly, I think most of them. I don't think they do it. I don't think Tom Hanks would do it on purpose. They just, they're stuck in Hollywood. You know, they're in a fantasy land. They don't, they're completely unplugged from reality. Just listen to some of the stuff these people say when they talk about politics. You go like, what planet is this guy on? You don't have a clue. And it's always been a safe place for the demonic realm to hide. Hollywood. Hollywood's, they like their wildness. And that wildness is his turf. So, it used to bother me. It used to bother me when I, this is years and years ago, you may remember this. People didn't even go to the movies, Christians. They didn't even go to the movies. There were certain groups of Christians, man, they wouldn't watch television, they wouldn't go to the movies. It's all the devil's work. And I thought they were absolute lunatics. They are lunatics. There's a lot of good stuff. There's really interesting movies. And there were people that wouldn't listen to certain kind of music. It's the devil's work. That Elvis Presley is. Demonic. Anyhow. And, you know, we all thought it was crazy. But you know what? It's the way in. Little pieces at a time. Little pieces at a time. Little tiny steps.
I was running around online a couple months ago. Well, more than a couple. When you first started playing the drums, and I was looking for Christian music, and I found a whole niche of Christians that condemn the kind of music that we play at
right.
church. I
right.
was floored. I had no idea.
Yeah, because they're
same thing.
They're stuck in defensive mode. I guess it saved them. You know, all this stuff starts for a reason, and not all of it is a bad reason. They for some reason or other they have this understanding that it's got to end bad. That road, that there's no way to go down it without
getting hurt.
Without getting hurt. Without it becoming. Now, I don't think that that's true,
no.
Because I think, just like Christ went and partied with Matthew and all those people, and the prostitutes and the money changers, and not the money changers, but the tax collectors and all those guys, it didn't bother him. Why? Because he wasn't looking to go that direction.
Right.
He was looking to bring them his direction. And we I believe that we have an ability to be able to go in a bar and witness if we want to and not be affected by that. I mean, it wouldn't bother me at all. I mean, at all. I might not go into a shooting gallery in Harlem, you know, where they're shooting heroin or stuff like that. I don't think I'm going to do that and witness to anybody. But I don't think, you know, I'd really be worried about street witnessing or anything like that. Because I'm not really, I don't believe it's going to taint me. Only because I have protected myself. The reality is most Christians don't have any protection. They really just don't know enough to defend themselves against an assault. And that's why they're going to go to the movie and see it.
Well, that begs
they
the
don't
question,
know enough.
How do you protect yourself?
Well, we can't. I mean, we already know that there's, we don't believe this just because we hear it. It doesn't matter how they package it. We have a foundation in truth that's stronger. You know, the concept behind Gnosticism is that, and it's really something I've always used it, that someone, a man with an experience, when confronted with a man with an opinion, doesn't have to worry about being changed by the guy with the opinion. Because
right.
the guy with the experience will win every time.
Right.
Now, but Gnosticism, they use the same line, but they use it in a little different way. My experience is, and you've seen this, so in your travels you see it all the time. Well, I have these feelings, and these feelings are real to me. And I have it, and it's all the New Age stuff that's really out there, that their feelings are right, and I believe they are having experiences, but they got no governor on it. There's no protection on their door. There's no lock on their door. There's nothing to stop anything from coming in. And what basically happens is, whatever is real for them, that's what's real.
There's no discernment.
No discernment.
People don't have a spiritual yardstick through which they can measure their experiences, which is what this is about. And if they did, they wouldn't buy any of the stuff that they experienced.
Right.
Or at least they wouldn't pay attention to it.
They wouldn't pay attention to it. Yeah. They would, but they don't know. They don't have any defensive mechanism whatsoever because they have nothing. There's no foundation. The problem with that Satan had with Christ was that he couldn't find anything in him. See, there was no root to work with. There's nothing to work with.
There's no
way in. There's nothing to work with. And the problem with us is there's usually an in. Okay? So we got to know what our weakness is, and we got to prepare ourselves to protect ourselves in those areas. And we do that by studying. Gnosticism is intellectual orgyism. It's, this is good for me. And they become their own god, basically. Gnostics, if you read their writings, there are people describe them as Epicureans. Epicurean is someone that enjoys good food and good wine and the good life, a nice cigar. And
they're just decadent. And they profess to be austere and very serious, but they're really completely self-indulgent.
Self-indulgent.
The word dithyrambic in all their writings, where you read it and the words don't make sense as they connect to one another. You read a few sentences and, okay, now I'm beginning to get something, and then
it's
gone. Because we have all that, and you read it. It's an instant sleeping pill. You ever want to go sleep at night, grab
this is a
text.
This is a... Gnostic all these Gnostic texts that are out there, like the Gospel
of... up anywhere.
Yeah, it's all Philip stories. And Thomas and all those other... You just like, my brain just locked up and I don't...
I'm my devil's advocate, and I can't think of a single sentence right now to give you an example. But there are some things that sure. seem like pearls
sure.
in there.
Oh yeah.
Just very few and far between, but there they are.
Oh, I know. I see them. I see them too. But they're just like totally out of context, no contextual, no nothing, just laying there, and it's like. Like the blind hog and the acorn. You know? Even a blind hog will find an acorn every once in a while.
Right.
You know, they're stumbling along through this stuff, and you know, it's like infinite number of monkeys syndrome. You know, you got enough monkeys, enough typewriters, you know, something's going to come out of this legible.
Right.
I don't know. And it's because they're trying to relate spiritually back to biblical kind of stuff and concepts, that's where some of the good stuff comes from. It's really coming out of what they don't really want to believe that kind of creeps up in the middle of their... you know, it's like listening to... It's like this is somebody who's really stoned. Talk. You know? And they'll start to talk and they go, and all of a sudden their hand will catch their attention. You know, they'll forget what they were talking about. You know, anyhow, I want to show you a couple pictures because we're done. Just about. But I'm going to take you through this because you're going to like this. Okay. There's the Last Supper. This is where they dragged Da Vinci into this. This is so funny because Da Vinci probably didn't have nothing to do with any of this stuff at all. They drag him in right here. Okay, well, did a picture didn't open up?
Are you sure the screen's big enough to accommodate?
Oh, I didn't open it.
Are you sure the screen's big enough to accommodate?
Yes, it should accommodate the Last Supper just fine. Yes, exactly. If it'll open the stupid picture.
The other Da Vinci picture.
The other Da Vinci. Oh, no, I had a Photoshop on it.
Oh,
so.
Right.
Yes. Come on. Where is my preview? What's going on here? There we go. All right. You see this? This is a picture of the Last Supper. You don't have to worry about it because I have close-ups. This is the one that Da Vinci painted. Okay, you want to focus your attention right around in here, in this area, okay? Because we're going to go and we're going to look there. There's the picture of this individual that was to the left of Jesus. There's a big space. And then there's this person here. That everybody, this is where they go. This is really Mary Magdalene. She was sitting at Jesus' right hand, position of authority. She's really the leader here, after Christ, because of their relationship with him. Now she's over here leading away from Jesus at the time, and they see that's looks like Mary Magdalene, doesn't it? Because they don't have a clue what she looks like, but it sounds good, okay? Because it looks like a woman. All right, there's a blow up of it. Looks like a woman, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's look at some other pictures. This is the angel of the Annunciation. Now, almost looks like a woman, doesn't it? Okay. Almost looks like there's some breasts there, almost. But here's the rough sketch of it that Da Vinci made before he finished this. He made a rough sketch, and this is it here. And I had to Photoshop out what would have obviously been an indicator that it was not a woman. Okay. And I... Here's what you got to understand about Da Vinci. He was gay. And he liked this feminine looking boy thing. Okay? There's a picture of Christ. He looks like a woman.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? There's a picture of John, the disciple. Looks like a woman. That's the one he used to do the one he did later. He used that for, that was one of the early sketches. And it's called, the sketch is called Portrait of John. Mm-hmm. Or the Head of John. Of course, that's his picture. It's tiny, but he's really ugly. Now, this is a woman. Okay? When he draws women, he draws women that look like women. When he draws men, he draws men that look like women.
So maybe he, let's say he intentionally drew the picture of Mary Magdalene right next to Jesus in the Last Supper.
Yeah, but he did.
What I'm trying to say, we cannot expect any truth from Da Vinci.
Okay, yeah, because we're sitting at a table.
Why would they expect any truth in it?
Right. Well, the point was basically this. It wasn't a picture of Mary Magdalene. It was a picture of his rendition of what he thought John looked like. In his stylized, what he considers, you know, there's a reason why, because John was really young. There were a couple of them, actually, that were pretty young, of the disciples. And so he had this idea that, and he would draw, I mean, I looked at about 30 portraits that he did, and they almost all look the same, whether they're men or women.
Okay.
Unless he's drawing a picture of an old man, Peter or somebody, he's got them looking like honeys. Because that's his fantasy, that's his...
If I remember right, Da Vinci drew it saying it was John. It is
right.
Da Vinci Code people that are saying that, oh, no, that's not
that's
John.
Really,
this
that's,
is Mary.
That's Mary. Why, yeah,
right.
That's why the, that's why...
That's what they're saying, that it looks like a woman and must be Mary Magdalene.
Must be right, yeah.
But it's them saying it. Da Vinci never,
no, he never
intended
said
that.
That.
So
he's just,
if it was Mary Magdalene, where would John go?
Right.
Did he just disappear out of the picture?
Yes.
He's just an unwilling participant in the whole conspiracy.
You can't do that to their conspiracy theory. You're going to mess it all up. Okay, he was out getting some more books, some more rolls or something. I don't know. That's about the size of it. I'm going to wind it up here. We can...